is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here through the hour to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Want to talk with Zorba? Here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. Zorba, what's the research we have this time around?
Veggies. Eat them to keep your brain young. Want to prevent Alzheimer's disease.
Oh, have an actual health
right,
effect.
You bet. Mom was right. It's not just important for strong bones and growing a healthy body. It's important to keep your brain sharp.
We'll talk this about is good research. Data. What else?
Very good research. AIDS. Problems with AIDS. It's going up. The number of deaths worldwide is increasing. It's estimated that it's going to be number three cause of death internationally in a number of years. So we have to talk about
that.
And problems with
AIDS. A listener-supplied recipe.
I like this one. Leah Zucchini Reuben. It's a great idea because it's a way to make your Reuben healthy. I happen to love Reubens. Why not make them healthier?
Leah Hawkins will be on the phone with us from Louisville coming up in, 25 minutes.
It's a great
or so.
Recipe.
800-462-7413 again is our toll-free number. Zorba, a listener with us now in Bloomington, Indiana. Hi.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Oh, no. We appreciate it. How can we help?
Well, for as long as she can remember, my girlfriend, who's now 24, mm-hmm. She's had a very severe needle phobia. In the past, she's had to be physically restrained to receive vaccinations, and she'll have nightmares and anxiety attacks for weeks before and after.
This is not just like, I don't like to get shots. This is really extreme, huh?
No, it's all involuntary. And when she was 16, she went through 8 months of desensitization therapy and really made no progress. I've done a little bit of research myself, and it doesn't seem like it's a vasovagal phobia, which would otherwise result in fainting. She says that would be a great way to go through the experience.
It'd be a great way to go through the experience by fainting. Then you don't even have the experience when you have the needle. So
exactly.
Yeah, vasovagal is a word for a faint. You know, you see the sight of blood. We see this in our office, for instance, all the time, especially with big guys. You know, big guys will come in, big macho 18-year-old guys will come in, 6'2", muscular, they'll get their blood drawn, they'll stand up and they'll collapse because they have a needle phobia and of a mild nature. Now, does she need blood work, or is she a diabetic where she has to have needles? I mean, what?
She doesn't need, it's not something she would have to do frequently, but really, I mean, I'm concerned that, you know, in the case of an emergency, especially, or in the case of vaccinations, which I don't know if she's
well,
up to date on.
Well, luckily, the chances that she's going to need a vaccination are fairly slim. But you have to have your blood drawn periodically. I mean, that is a common thing that is done. And if she ever gets pregnant, for instance, she's going to have blood drawn a lot. Needles go into the arm, and so you have to get through. Tell me, so she had desensitization therapy with a psychiatrist in an office. What was that about?
What she tells me is that she was, you know, told to lie down and start to visualize the experience of the needle and visualize the needle and so on, and she'd just go straight into a panic attack.
Yeah,
every time.
Has she ever had drugs?
The only time since we've been together that I've seen that she's had to take an injection was for a dental visit, and she was put on an oral sedative.
Yeah, what happened then?
Well, she was able to handle it, but still, she had nightmares for weeks before and after.
Okay, I've got some suggestions. First of all, this is not going to be handled by simple desensitization therapy. That hasn't worked at all. I recommend that actually what you use is a variety of drugs like Xanax, which is a relative of Valium, drugs like Ativan, and these are drugs that we use for people, for instance, who have claustrophobia when they have to go and get an MRI exam or a CAT scan, and that basically she start on that 2 or 3 days before she has the needle put in, and she continues for 2 or 3 days afterwards. What I think is happening is she has a lot of anticipation, and if she's on it for 2 or 3 days beforehand, frankly, these drugs have a way of working, but she's not on them long enough. You can't just have it an hour before. She needs more intensive therapy. The other method, seriously, is to take an antidepressant such as fluoxetine, which is Prozac, for a week before to a week after, and on the day of the examination, take it. Now, I'll tell you why she should do this. after she realizes the needle is not going to destroy her life, you know, she has this absolute, you know, subconscious anxiety, she will then be able to go without the drugs. But it's probably going to take 5 or 10 times that she'll have to have blood drawn or a shot before this.
What about the drug people take before they make speeches, people who are nervous?
Well, that's a good idea. Drugs such as Ingerol or Propranolol might also work. And that's a possibility, too. That might be used with it. But I think she needs something even stronger. I mean, if she had to be held down and she had desensitization therapy. But you bring up a very good point, because sometimes those drugs will work for people who need to take their blood every day, such as diabetics who become upset with this. So.
Do you think that this would work? She understands intellectually that it's not going to destroy her life.
Of
it's not going to kill her. Do you think that this would still work in spite of that?
Oh, absolutely. No. But I think she needs to have some drug therapy. I don't think it's going to work without that.
Second question is, how do we go about convincing the insurance company?
The drugs are cheap. These drugs are cheap. You don't have to convince an insurance company. You have to find a physician who is willing to work with you on the drugs. The drugs are dirt cheap. They're going to cost you less than going out for a dinner or a meal. These are not expensive drugs. But what you need is a doctor who is an advocate for her, who is willing to try these drugs over a period of time. And that's what you really need. Good luck. And it's really, really neat that you are advocating for your girlfriend in a situation like this. That is really, really neat.
And good luck with it.
Good luck.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. Zorba, tell us about this study on veggies helping to keep the brain young.
Fruits and veggies, fruits and veggies. That's what your mom said. You know, it's quite interesting. The study is looking at fruits and vegetables. Now, for many years, we thought that vitamin E was really the key to prevent Alzheimer's disease. And then several long-term studies show no. Vitamin E capsules do not appear at all to either keep Alzheimer's from developing or help Alzheimer's once you have it. And vitamin E is present in a number of veggies, a number of nuts, and fruits. Well, now we've discovered, and this is a longitudinal study, 5-year study, that green leafy vegetables, dark green leafy vegetables.
This is a study of people over 65.
Over 65, that if you basically have 2 servings of dark green leafy vegetables a day, and we're talking about spinach, obviously spinach that's been washed, obviously not tainted spinach, kale, collard greens, broccoli, that you appear to have a distinctly decreased risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is the vitamin E in the spinach, but frankly, it's difficult to separate.
But you say fruits and veggies. Fruits, apparently, according to the study, didn't do anything.
Did not have that at all. You know, but this goes along with what we've... And also, the issue is, this is not a study where, you know, half the people ate green veggies and half the people didn't. It's a study which is observational, and people who eat more fruits and vegetables do other things. We know that the more veggies you eat, the more likely you are, for instance, to have a more active lifestyle, more likely you are probably to read and to be engaged in a conversation versus sort of sitting in front of the boob tube and just sort of watching television.
Right.
So there are other issues. But I think this goes along with this 5-a-day life for life or 7-a-day for life of fruits and vegetables, that we get them from both. And that's...
But according to the study, the fruits didn't do anything.
Did not do anything for Alzheimer's disease. But fruits are useful in terms of the fact that they have other micronutrients. And this goes along with an idea that I've had for years, which is that your plate should be colorful. That the more color you have on the plate, the more micronutrients you have on the plate, the more likely you are to have carotenoids and flavonoids. And this shows that it is the dark green stuff on your plate that may prevent your memory from failing. And my mom had Alzheimer's disease. This means a lot to me.
Yeah. So your plate should be not colorful, but green, dark green.
Your plate should be dark green. But we don't want to forget the orange, because then we've got a little pumpkin on our plate. We don't want to forget, you know, the fruits that are on there. But this study shows it's the dark green stuff that makes a difference. So that means, Tom, that your favorite veggie, iceberg lettuce, is not going to do anything at all.
No.
I've seen you with those wedge salads.
You give me a lot of shots that are appropriate, but that one isn't. Iceberg lettuce is not my favorite.
But you know what? For you, know what this means? This means that tofu isn't going to help your brain, right? It's
a
good example.
Big surprise. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. A listener joins in now from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi, guys.
What's up?
Oh, boy. Well, as predicted, we recently got back from a vacation where one of my 2 kids got sick. It seems like every time we travel by air, it never fails a day or two after we arrive at our destination. One or both of the kids is sick, ruining the whole trip. So I already wipe down everything in front of me on the plane with alcohol swabs, which gets me quite a few dirty looks. But I'm this close to putting them, you know, masks on them, which won't make them happy and will also make people think I'm a crazy, freaky germaphobe. So I wonder if there's anything that can be done.
So they get sick. They get sick on the vacation, or?
Well, it's hard to tell. They may actually catch something once, you know, immediately upon arrival. But it seems to me the incubation period seems to be that they've caught something while on the plane.
On the airplane.
Yeah. So how old are your kids?
My boy is 3.5, and my daughter's a little over one.
Little over one. So you are at the ideal age for having germs that are just sitting, viruses that are in these wonderful children. And when they get sick, you know, they produce all this mucus, and then they come up to you and they go, "Mommy, Mommy, I want to be with you." And that's, you know, basically what happens is children that age are in intimate contact with other children. You know, they're right up to them and have their face right in the other one. Is that your child in the background?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
She's nursing.
I'm keeping her as quiet as I can.
Of course.
They're apparently not getting sick from other kids. They're getting sick on the plane or on the vacation.
Well, they have. What happens is kids have incubating viruses all the time. That's how they develop their natural immunity. That's what they're supposed to do. I mean, that's how we don't get nearly as sick as often as adults, because we get sick as children and we develop antibodies, so we develop a memory. Putting masks on an airplane, that'll never work. You know, they're going to take the mask. They're going to pull it off. You're going to have people sitting around you that are going to give you. Can you imagine the looks? They're going to go, not only is this woman a germaphobe, but she is insisting that they have masks over their children.
Then they're going to wonder what your children have.
Idea. I got you.
No, you tell the kids, you can pretend to be superheroes. Put on these masks.
Put the masks. Yeah. A one-year-old? The three-year-old.
Oh, nuts.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I do recommend to people that really helps a little bit, not a lot, is that they wipe their hands with soapless cleansers, things like Purell, because your hands are really where you spread a lot of the bacteria and the viruses. So you have these little Purell. They now come in wipes. They have the, you know, little purse, little things that will fit in your purse. And you do that on your hands periodically. And you also put it on their hands. And that really will help keep down the number of germs that are spread. I think that's useful. And short of that, no, it's not the airplane that they're catching it on. It really is the incubating things, the viruses beforehand. The problem is once you put them in a confined environment like the airplane, it's really tough. And so you're right in front of them and they're sick and they don't have a chance to sort of spread out in the house. So it's so good luck.
Okay, so it has nothing to do with the recirculating air?
Not at all. And there's lots of data on that, because this is a big issue. It's a big issue for stewards and stewardesses and people who fly a lot, businesses. This idea of toxic air in the airplane really hasn't passed the muster when it comes to science. What it has been shown is that if you sit next to somebody who's sick on an airplane for 4 hours and they're sneezing and hacking and coughing, you are more likely to get it than, you know, if you sit next to somebody.
Do you or your husband have any brothers or sisters in town near you or anything? Yeah.
No.
Oh, no for good friends where you could dump the kids and take a vacation on your own?
In a couple years.
I've got a better suggestion. Have you ever heard of NetJets? NetJets is where you can buy into a private jet company, and you can see it. I saw it in a magazine. I read about it all the time.
I'll send you my grant proposal.
See, so you and your family can go without other people. NetJets, they'll chauffeur you to wherever you have to go. And, you know, your children won't have any problems at all. I would recommend, you know, buying the farm with NetJets. That's it.
Okay.
Just travel.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot.
800-462-7413.
That's right. Instead of college, just take that private jet from place to place.
A listener now, Zorba, in West Frankfort, Illinois. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help?
Well, I have this clearing of my throat. And I've had it for over a year now.
Okay.
And the doctors tell me that they've looked at my throat and stuff, and they say that it's habit forming. It's just habit.
Uh-huh.
But I have this mucus, phlegm, whatever, that builds up in the back of my throat. And, I mean, I can feel it. And after I talk a while, I start getting hoarse if I don't clear my throat.
Okay.
And try to get some of that out.
Okay. Are you a smoker?
No.
Not a smoker. Were you a smoker before in the past?
No.
No.
Never.
Okay. Non-smoker. Uh-huh. Asthma? Any history of asthma?
No.
Okay. Now, question for you.
Uh-huh.
Have your doctors put you on a drug to reduce acid in your stomach, such as Prilosec?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
How much did they put you on? A pill a day? Two pills a day?
A pill a day. Mm-hmm. 30 milligrams when I do need it. I don't take it all the time.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I didn't seem to have any problems before. Mm-hmm. I had a real bad bronchitis.
Did that do anything, by the way, that dosage?
Mm-hmm. On the acid?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Did that change your cough at all?
No.
Uh-huh. Mm. Okay. How much coffee do you drink?
Quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. How much caffeinated coffee, non-caffeinated coffee?
Both.
Okay. How much alcohol do you drink?
About a glass of wine or a couple of glasses a week, maybe.
Okay. I sound like a doctor, don't I?
Yeah. Kind of.
It's okay. I'm only playing a doctor. No. I'm really a doctor. Okay. I've got some suggestions.
Okay.
I think your cough is from acid reflux, and I think you have not been treated aggressively enough, and I've got some very specific suggestions.
Okay.
And you've got to do them absolutely for 1 month, and you'll know. And the reason is a lot of cough is caused by acid reflux. A number of years ago, I had vocal cord nodules. Went in, saw my favorite ENT doc. Great guy. Can't do surgery anymore because of problems. I went to see him because I thought if I don't need surgery, I don't want it.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't want to go to a surgeon. So he looked at these and he said, I think these should be taken off. I wish I could do it. I have got some wonderful instruments. I'm going to send you to my partner who does it. I went to that partner and he said, wait a minute. I've got new research on acid reflux. I said, I don't have acid reflux. I can eat anything. I don't drink. I drink some coffee, a lot of coffee, but
yeah.
This. Went on intensive therapy. The nodules disappeared.
Oh.
When I take the drug, the cough disappeared. I followed these instructions exactly. I'm now a believer that many people have acid reflux and have this. And here's my suggestion. Number one,
okay.
No coffee. That's the toughest.
No coffee.
No
okay.
coffee.
No.
No
why
coffee.
No coffee?
Because caffeine increases acid reflux. So no coffee. Now, you can have, if you want to, one cup of decaf in the morning and one cup of decaf in the afternoon, because there are other aliphatic hydrocarbons, they're called, in the coffee that can increase acid reflux.
Uh-huh.
But if you can get by without coffee, fine. Zero caffeine. Zero.
Okay,
so
zero.
No soft drinks with caffeine.
Zero caffeine. No,
no
coffee.
Chocolate. No nothing.
No chocolate. No tea that's caffeinated. You can have herbal tea. So I would go to herbal tea and hot water. That's what I do. 1 month.
The green tea? Can I have my green tea decaffeinated?
No. Well, if it's decaffeinated, yes. Decaffeinated green tea is okay. Number two, no alcohol. Zero for 1 month.
No wine.
No alcohol, no wine coolers, shots of Jägermeister that you have when you get home. Cut out the margaritas, no vodka, vodka chasers, no alcohol at all.
Okay.
No wine. Number three, I want you to go to the store and I want you to get Prilosec over the counter. It's not a prescription drug, okay?
Prilosec, okay.
And I want you to take 20 milligrams twice a day.
20
it's double the dose. And at the end of a week, if the cough hasn't stopped, I want you to up it to 40 milligrams twice a day. Okay?
40, okay.
That's right. Now, if you got to check with your insurance, this might be covered by your insurance, which means it's a generic copay. It'll be cheaper for you. But you've got to take double or triple the dose that is on the package. So that's 40 milligrams a day, or if that doesn't work, 40 milligrams twice a day. That's what I want you to be on, okay? 40 milligrams daily, and if that doesn't work, double it to 40 milligrams twice a day.
After 1 week.
Do this for 1 month. That's all you have to do. Do it for 1 month. And then I believe that your cough will go away. That's what I believe.
Okay, I have a cough but also have this clearing.
Clearing is from the irritation of the acid reflux in your stomach.
It's not from my sinuses at all.
I don't think it's from your sinuses. And I have to tell you, for many, many years, I thought this is from my sinuses. Mm-hmm. I have allergies. Mm-hmm. It's not that at all. And then I began to notice something after I did this. I began to notice that I had clear my throat more in the morning after I have coffee.
Uh-huh.
And I began to notice that I would clear my throat more after I eat food for about an hour or two afterwards. I never noticed this. Never, never, never. Mm-hmm. And once I started taking this, I realized, and it started working, that if I had any trouble coughing, it's because I had a little bit of food, and it lasted for about an hour after I ate.
So you've given up coffee.
Okay.
I've given up food. I'm no longer eating, and I feel really, really good. I'm not going to last very long, but I'm giving up food, coffee, wine, drink. I'm a very dull and boring person. No, I take my Prilosec, and I drink my coffee in my morning, and I have my red wine in the evening. But when I'm really irritated and I start clearing my throat more, I cut down on those, and I've discovered my cough disappears. Call us back. Please let us know.
Okay, will do.
Good
Thanks
luck.
For calling.
Thank you.
800-462-7413.
Oh, and speaking of throats, Zorba, let's take a quick email from our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox.
Okay.
This one comes to us from Marilyn in Toronto, Ontario. Marilyn writes, as a big fan of the show, I never fail to hear one or two good tips for improving my health. Now, I'm afflicted with laryngitis. I heard that boiling a chopped up onion in water for a few minutes and then drinking the liquid mixed with honey could help. It hasn't so far. Do you have any suggestions?
It hasn't so far, so it's not helping. You know, laryngitis is due to an inflammation of the vocal cords. Mm-hmm. What happens is we have these little vocal cords. We play them like a violin or a guitar. And when they become thickened or swollen because we've got an upper respiratory infection, that's when our voice starts to change and we get hoarse. So anything that reduces that inflammation makes us feel better. Well, basically, they're 99% of the time they're viral. What reduces that inflammation is basically when our body works through that virus. And then what we can do is take things that sort of help us feel better to sort of get over it and hydrate our body. Mm-hmm. So some people recommend gargling with salt water. Other people recommend gargling with mouthwashes such as Listerine. This is a variation on that honey. In Europe, they recommend honey and red wine. And I can still remember when I had laryngitis and I worked in a lab as a student, I would gargle with honey and red wine and then I would drink the red wine. So it wasn't very good for my classwork, but it felt really good and it didn't bother me anymore. This is a variation. So, you know, if it makes you feel better, use it. If it doesn't make it feel better, well, your body just has to clear that.
Well, infection. It hasn't worked so far. Maybe another month or two or three.
Well, you know, and she sent it to us by an email. I'm sure she's done with her laryngitis by now. I hope so. Well, good luck. Thanks for listening. That's one recipe. Bang! I'm not going to recommend to other people.
Lots more of your calls coming up. But before that, our recipe. This one from Leah Hawkins in Louisville, Kentucky.
Absolutely
great. What is it?
Leah's zucchini Reuben. You know, Reubens are usually made with lots of fat, lots of oil. They're like not a delicious recipe. Well, I think this one is really good. Yes, Reubens are really good, but this one is really good too.
We'll find out. Coming up here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Do you have a question for Zorba? Well, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. But before we get to your call, we'll be welcoming from Louisville, Kentucky, Leah Hawkins, who has our recipe of the week. Leah, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate your submitting this recipe for Leah's, Leah's zucchini.
Wait a minute.
What?
Wait a minute. What do you mean a little vain? Just because you name it after yourself.
She could have called it yummy, yummy.
No. I think it's better with Leah's, you know. I mean, you know, that's exactly it. Once this is mainstreamed into America, people will start to wonder, now, who was Leah? And there'll be all these stories that'll come up, you know, and you'll make it into America's mythology.
Usually when we think Reuben, we don't think health at all.
No, not at all.
Leah, how'd you come up with this one?
Well, my husband loves Reubens, and, you know, I'm always looking to try to find a healthy way to eat what we love and still enjoy it.
You bet. You know, I'll tell you, I happen to love Reubens, and whenever I get them at a restaurant, I have guilt. I mean, now, it's not as if I eat a terrible diet. I don't eat a terrible diet, but I sit there and I go, should I have this Reuben? And then, of course, when I eat it, I go, oh, this is really delicious. And when I'm all done, then the guilt resurfaces. You know, it's before I eat the Reuben and after I eat the Reuben, but not during the Reuben.
Well, no guilt at all with this one. As we go through
this,
Leah, jump in when you'd like on the ingredients. Tell us about it, Zora.
Okay, so we start out with four small zucchinis.
Four small zucchinis.
So do you use yellow zucchinis, green zucchinis, whatever you have around? What do you use?
Typically green. Mm-hmm. The farmer's market is great here, so we try to get
right.
get zucchini from there.
Right. During the season, that's wonderful. Four slices of rye bread, right. You can always find some good fat-free whole grain rye bread. If I get a good bakery, the rye bread makes a difference. I can imagine this with marbled rye and with anything. So the bread is probably, well, I would assume the bread is very important.
It is very important. Mm-hmm. And now there are so many options. You can get it with high fiber and
right.
all the stuff that you're supposed to have.
So four slices of bread.
Right. You know, but this is when we think about our diet, when we think about doing things and eating better, this is really one of the places that we can get whole grains. And
mm-hmm.
if we have a time that we can get whole grains, this is when we really want to do it. Okay, 2 tablespoonfuls each of fat-free vinaigrette dressing and 2 tablespoonfuls of fat-free Thousand Island salad dressing.
2 big tea fat-free vinaigrette dressing, 2 big tea fat-free Thousand Island.
Now, I find this really good in this recipe. I tend to stay away from fat-free salad dressings on my salad because I don't like the taste. Mm-hmm. What I started to use is salt and pepper, and then I use a small amount of extra virgin olive oil. But when it comes to something such as this, you want to have that flavor, and you don't want to have the fat.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, that's a good idea. 4 slices light Swiss cheese.
4 slices of light Swiss cheese.
Right, right. When it comes to melted cheese, I think fat-free cheese is dynamite. It really works. When it comes to taste, I don't find it works very well. And what I eat is less cheese of a good cheese.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to melting, I think they have very similar tastes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get the 2% kind. So
right,
kind of
right.
best of both
yeah.
worlds.
Yeah, and 2% is that nice medium cheese, which is what light cheese really is. 1/2 cup of sauerkraut.
1/2 cup of sauerkraut.
Mm-hmm. You buy that in the refrigerator case or you have it in the bottle, in the jar?
I just get it in the jar because...
Yeah, I don't find any difference myself.
I don't think so
either. How about you? You're a big cook. I see kraut at lunch.
Good one.
That's right.
Kraut. Good one.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kraut juice. Have you tried the kraut juice that you can buy in Wisconsin? Kraut juice. Can you imagine? Who drinks kraut juice? How about kraut juice and vodka as a new drink in New York?
They really
kraut
do
and
sell
vodka.
Kraut juice, don't they?
Absolutely. And cooking. And, of course, non-fat cooking spray. Great. The Pam spray or the other
okay.
Non-fat. Okay. Slices of zucchini into thin slices lengthwise in a bowl. Marinate the slices in the vinaigrette. So they're going to be marinated and filled up, in the vinaigrette. How long do you marinate it for?
About 30 minutes.
30 minutes, so not a long time. Then broil the zucchini for 5 minutes until soft but not crisp. So it's going to be broiled. Easy way to do it. Assemble the sandwiches with Thousand Island dressing, sauerkraut, zucchini on the rye bread. Then coat a skillet with fat-free cooking sprays. Cook the sandwich until golden brown on each side. And bon appetit. So basically, you're taking and you're cooking the zucchini beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
So it's softened, but it has been marinated with vinaigrette. This is dynamite. I love it. Only 228 calories per serving. Low fat. I mean, 5 grams of fat is really low fat, absolutely. Of course, because of the sauerkraut, it has a bit of sodium in it, but that's really not the issue. But this, because you used fat-free whole grain bread, you get 33% of your dietary fiber for the day from this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a whole grain sandwich like this at lunch and you have a nice bran cereal in the morning or a whole grain cereal in the morning, you've got all the fiber you need for the day, which
yeah.
is great.
Tell the truth. Your husband likes this as much as a regular Reuben?
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that he can have on a regular basis rather than
You hit it. This is something you can have on a regular basis all the time, and that's really the key. Like I said, I feel guilty when I go to a restaurant,
right.
and I frankly don't order them very much because I know they're not very healthy. I think this is a great recipe, and it's wonderful.
And thank you so much for submitting.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yep, bye-bye.
Thanks much. And, of course, you can get a copy of this recipe on our website at zorbapastor.org. You'll see a wonderful other things on our website when you go there, and you can get other recipes, too, and some neat pictures of Tom and me.
Yeah, right. That's exciting. And for sending us this winning recipe, Leah gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low-Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's really easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
zorba@wpr.org.
For today's recipe, send a stamped self-addressed business-sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706, or use that email address Zorba gave you.
Ha, 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 ha.
Our phone number is 1-800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is in Queens, New York. Hi.
How are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I have a couple different aspects of a lactose intolerance question.
Oh.
I travel frequently around the world, and I've noticed that I live in New York, and here we have lots of delis, and there are cheeses on sandwiches and things, and I generally have problems with cream cheese and sour cream, but I've noticed that other cheeses don't bother me. When I go to France, I eat their fresh cheeses, which is usually part of after dinner, and I noticed that when I eat cheeses in France, I will get some gassing and just very, very minor discomfort, but I don't have as powerful a reaction as I do to cream cheese and sour cream, and I'm just curious about what the difference would be.
Oh, sure.
And pasteurization
sure.
versus non-pasteurization, that kind of thing?
Sure. Well, I just recommend moving to France.
Yeah, you're in France. That's
Tom
what
and
the
I are here.
Yeah.
We're on the same page. We didn't even have to look at each other. We knew the answer. Stay in France, leave Queens. That's a pretty obvious answer to me. But since we can't do that necessarily as the optimal answer, it has to do with, it's not the pasteurization versus non-pasteurization, because the cheese is pasteurized in both places. I mean, pasteurization was a major step forward in that it cut down on the diseases that are spread through this really live product. And so they're pasteurized all over France, unless you get them at some special farms in special areas. The difference has to do with other things, and it really has to do with how the cheese is processed. The amount of lactose that's in the cheese is the thing that is actually producing the problem. So if we look at lactase is what we actually have in our body that actually takes lactose, which is the sugar in cheese, and we break it down. If we look at yogurt, for instance, there are many people who can tolerate yogurt because the bacteria, which are lactobacillus within the yogurt, can actually help us digest that. My recommendation is the way to do it essentially is to put the enzyme into your stomach before you have the cheese. You can do that with a pill called Lactaid, and that comes in a generic form now, and it's a pill you put in the stomach, and basically it's an enzyme that is in there and helps you digest it. And you can also have drops that you take, and that's pretty much what you have to do for this, because the problem is your body is not processing it, and that's from the genetics that you have. For instance, there are many Asians who can't eat a lot of cheese. There are many African Americans who can't eat a lot of cheese for the same reason. Also, you may notice that different kinds of cheese, you've noticed that, but it may be the amount of cheese and it may be the manufacture of the cheese. So, for instance, you may notice that some brands of cheese you can tolerate and some brands you can't. But that's what you have to do. Either put the enzyme into your stomach, decrease the amount of cheese, or the best option, move to France.
Thanks a lot to the caller. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Tecumseh, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi, guys.
What's up?
Well, I had a question about cheese as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pregnant, and during my diligent research about the cans and can't do's, I read that pregnant women should not eat soft cheeses like brie and feta and blue cheese. And I was just kind of curious if that's actually true or if that's a myth.
I think that's a myth. I don't think that's true at all. You can certainly eat soft cheeses. That would not make any difference at all. You certainly should not eat unpasteurized cheeses.
Okay.
Now, for the most part, you can't get unpasteurized cheese in America except in special, very, very unusual specialty grocery stores and on the farm. And the reason is, in many states, it's illegal. And the reason why it's illegal is Listeria and other bacteria can be spread in unpasteurized milk and cheese, and it's a special problem for pregnant women. So, unless you go and have this, if you will, almost religious belief in unpasteurized milk, which people do, and I don't have that same belief because I think pasteurization was a great step forward in public health, you can't get it. But no, you can eat soft cheeses. There's nothing in soft cheeses that are going to bother you. And in fact, you can imagine if soft cheeses were a problem, they would be labeled and they would say, stay away from soft cheeses because it's bad for the baby. I think it's just one of those things that you get. I have a couple questions. Where are you along with your pregnancy?
I'm a little over 7 months.
This is your first child?
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What are you doing for exercise?
Uh, not enough, that's no. for sure.
Mm-hmm. You're doing something? Are you walking? Do your legs swell a lot? Or?
Well, I do yoga. I do some yoga.
Yoga's good. Very important. Mm-hmm. What else are you doing? Do you have time?
She was asking about cheese, Zorba.
but I think when you look at a diet with pregnancy, and it's something that a pregnant woman thinks about all the time, making sure that her diet has enough calcium and it's balanced, I think it's also important to look at exercise. And the reason is it helps you feel better. It prepares you for birthing the baby. It makes you healthier overall in terms of your recovery following that. I think yoga is an excellent thing to do. And I think walking, if you can walk, is also excellent. And I recommend that you get a pedometer and that you try to do 10,000 steps a day and see if you can move up to that. Just because both of those things together, a little yoga and a pedometer, is going to make a difference in terms of your overall recovery from the pregnancy, which I think is good. And often we think about diet and we don't think about that other aspect because it's America. We think about food more than we think about exercise. So.
But well, cheese is okay.
Cheese is fine.
Well, thank you for the advice.
You're welcome. Thanks. Good luck on your baby.
Yeah, kind of a cheesy edition of Zorba
Pastor. A cheesy edition? Oh, gosh, I can't believe it. Where are these jokes coming from?
Our listeners, Zorba, come to the rescue once again. Not too long ago, we had a caller on who was getting rashes from her baby wipes. Remember that?
Oh, yes.
Madison, Wisconsin, said that he and his wife had the same problem and wanted to share their remedy. Homemade baby wipes.
Oh, wow.
This is really interesting.
Oh, wow.
Reed says all you need to make these is a roll of paper towels.
Okay, okay.
Baby shampoo.
Okay.
And baby oil.
Uh-huh, all right.
You combine 2 tablespoons of the oil and 2 tablespoons of the baby shampoo with 4 cups of water.
Uh-huh.
Then
okay.
you soak the paper towels in the solution.
Uh-huh.
When you're done, you have a batch of rash free
baby
wipes.
Wow, how wonderful is that? Homemade wipes for babies. I think that's great. I love it. I just love it. Thank you so much for sharing that. That is a wonderful thing. It's not just a recipe on the show. It's how to take care of babies on the show, too.
We always enjoy your tips, comments, and suggestions. Just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Now, don't go away. More of your calls are coming up. We have our medical myth buster, and coming up right now, some really interesting research. So do stay tuned here to Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. But Zorba, before our next call, some more not good news about AIDS.
That's absolutely right. Not good news about AIDS. You know, AIDS is so interesting as an epidemic. Here it is. Safe sex was really in the mainstream, especially for young promiscuous gay men, in the mainstream in America, as practicing it as 20 years ago when you would see people dying. And then, of course, we have the advent of triple drug therapy, which really took AIDS from a very high cause of death in America to a much lower cause of death, moving it down to number 15 or number 20, and then you get a resurgence of unprotected sex, and you get a resurgence of AIDS, and you get a resurgence of AIDS worldwide, and it's a huge issue. Right now, it's increasing dramatically, so it's going to be the third leading cause of death in the world after heart disease.
The third leading cause of death in the world.
Right now, if we look at it last year, roughly it was about 3 million deaths last year from AIDS, and the estimation now is that at the present rate, it's going to go up to 120 million deaths from the year 2030. So we're in the middle of this incredible scourge that is getting worse year by year by year by year, and for a whole bunch of reasons.
Well, you know, some
bunch
of them.
Reasons. Well, some of the reasons are the fact that you can't just put all your eggs in this idea of abstinence. You know, that has been the major political issue, as we know. You know, the Surgeon General who was C. Everett Koop was not liked by people who believed that abstinence was the most important thing because he talked about safe sex and condoms, and there was this non-scientific idea that has no science at all that when you talk about condoms, condoms, you're encouraging sex, and there's no scientific evidence that that's the case. Zero scientific evidence for that. And so what happens is you don't have condoms available in areas in Africa. They're not cheaply available in the U.S., and that's one big issue. You know, just the free availability of condoms would cut down dramatically. And then there's education. We recently helped fund a young woman from the University of Wisconsin Medical School who went to Nigeria to try to educate Nigerian college students on AIDS. They had no idea how to prevent it. College students in Nigeria didn't have some simple rudimentary education.
I heard not that long ago that here in the United States, something like a quarter of the new HIV cases in the U.S. are people over 60
years
old.
That's the other issue. That's the other issue. These are older men who are either sleeping, who are either having gay relationships with significant others or gay relationships with prostitutes, either male or female, who are now getting AIDS. And so it's dramatically increasing among 50 and 60-year-old men. But once again, because they're not using safe sex techniques for the same reason, because they're just not seeing it as a leading cause of death. It's a scourge.
Yeah. Is there any bright light at the
end of the bright light is education. The bright light is spending money on education in this country and worldwide. The bright light is making condoms freely available. And the bright light is having a change in the public perception of AIDS as a leading cause of death that can affect you or your children or your spouse or someone else. And only when we do that will we make a difference.
1-800-462-7413 if you'd like to talk with Zorba. A listener joins now, Zorba, in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I'm over 60. I'm in good health, except I just had a doctor's appointment in August, and she said I had high cholesterol. I've never had high cholesterol before. And when I turned 60, I decided to, like, blow out the fluff and start eating things that I really like steak and cream in my coffee and things like this. Mm-hmm. And so, and by the way, I really believe in you guys. I think you do a great job. So.
Thank you. I have to laugh about that, but please go on.
So in the meantime, I don't like to take pills. I'm on Boniva for osteoporosis, but I don't like to take pills if I can keep, and she wanted to, my oncologist wanted to put me on a medication, and I'd like to try to do this without going on a medication. I think that's too much the American way.
Now you said your oncologist. So what, you had cancer?
I had squamous cancer in my throat, and they radiated,
okay.
And so I can't spit, but I'm alive, you know.
Yeah,
so here I am.
That's good. When did you have the radiation?
It was 7 years ago.
7 years ago. By the way, were you a smoker or a chewer? Did it come from tobacco?
I was a smoker 30 years ago.
So they
never found the source.
Yeah. So if it was 30 years ago, it was probably not from that. First of all, I want to congratulate you at a certain age, saying I'm going to eat the foods that I want to eat. I think that's useful. But on the other hand, you know, all things in moderation. Socrates said that back 2,500 years ago. How high is your cholesterol?
It was 210.
210. 210 is not really, really very high. High was your LDL or bad cholesterol?
Oh, Laz, I don't remember
That's an important number.
Let me tell you what I'm doing, Zorba. Okay, this is where you come into the situation. I cut out my steak. I'm walking at least a mile a day.
Great.
I cut out my dairy products, and I'm eating Cheerios for breakfast and lunch.
Cheerios for breakfast. Have you rechecked your cholesterol?
No. That was like August when she did that, and I'm thinking should take longer than...
Yeah, what you want to do is recheck it. I would recommend rechecking it 3 to 6 months later. Then you'll see what this is doing. Now, I do want to make a couple things. First of all, for some people, diet makes a difference. They do exactly what you're doing, and their cholesterol then gets under control.
Okay.
For other people, diet doesn't make a difference at all. They simply produce too much cholesterol, and they're on the cardboard diet, and their cholesterol is still elevated. But the bottom line issue is a cholesterol of 210 may or may not need medication or may not need treatment. Depends on what your HDL is and what your LDL is, your good and your bad cholesterol. Here's my recommendation.
Yes,
call up your doctor, find out your total cholesterol, your HDL or good cholesterol, your LDL or bad cholesterol, and your blood pressure. Then go to the CDC website, cdc.gov, or the NIH website, or simply Google the word heart attack risk calculator. That's Heart Attack Risk Calculator. What you do is you'll pop up something from the CDC website or another similar website. And this uses Framingham study data. And what they do is you put in your total cholesterol, you put in your HDL cholesterol. Some of them have you put in your LDL cholesterol. And it tells you what your risk is. And it tells you whether or not you even need to lower your cholesterol. If you're a 210 with a high HDL, you're fine. If you're a 210 and you have a bad LDL or a high LDL, it means something different. And a lot of doctors are over-prescribing cholesterol medications for no reason. There's no family history. They're not smoking. The LDL or bad cholesterol is really okay. So I like people to be in charge. Go to that website and figure it out. But you're taking charge of your body, and that's a much better idea. Much better idea no matter what. So no matter what, you're going to gain something from exercising and changing your diet because it's not just cholesterol. So I want to congratulate you. Most people don't do that. Of course, you know, if I have another question for you.
Yes.
You had cancer 7 years ago. How did that change your life?
Oh, God almighty. That's one reason why mm-hmm. I decided to blow out the fluff and have, you know, you mm-hmm. look at things different.
Yeah, in a more positive way, right?
Oh, yeah. But I really like cream in my coffee. But my father died of a heart attack at 47. I'm playing with fire if
no,
I do stupid
stuff. No, that's right. That's the family history. That's not in the chart, and that counts.
Yeah.
But when I talk to people who have survived cancer, they tell me that the sun is brighter, that the day is brighter. When there's gray skies, they go, yes, but there's nice moisture in the air. They have a different view of life. It's much more brisk. And if we could only capture that and bottle it, that would mean something. So
well, you're so right. Truly true.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate the call.
It was a delight. Thank you, gentlemen.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's interesting. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, time now for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today. It comes to us from Hugh in Buffalo, New York. Hugh writes, I read that it is bad to eat after a certain hour in the evening. The presumption seems to be that the body doesn't process food after a certain time in the day, and food ingested after that time magically turns to fat. Now, this sounds like the old nonsense about waiting half an hour after eating before you swim. Actually, it was an hour for me, which I know from my lifeguarding days is bunk. So, Zorba, is this a myth?
Yes, it is a myth. It is a myth the calories that you take in the evening are more likely to put fat on your body than calories you take in the morning or the afternoon or after sunrise or after sunset. It is a myth. Calories are calories are calories. So the idea that the food at night sticks to your body turns out not to be the
case.
But
if you do a lot of exercise right after you eat, it doesn't work off the...
That's morning, afternoon, or evening. That's not an evening thing. The question was, does food at night more likely to stay on your body? And the answer is no. It's just as likely if you take food at lunch. But there are things that exercise does for you. First of all, if you walk after you eat, you are, first of all, anyone who exercises tends to eat fewer calories. But when you walk, you tend to move the food through the digestive tract. And there's some people who believe that there are fewer calories, you know, that are extracted from it. So if you eat the calories at night and you walk after dinner, you're fine. It's not the nighttime. That's the issue.
The answer is sort of yes and no then. Here.
Well, no. The answer is it's not the nighttime stuff. The answer is also how much we eat. The average diet breaks down at 6 o'clock in the evening, and most people simply eat a lot of calories between 6 o'clock and 10 o'clock in the evening. And they get their calories from food cues on television. If you look at television, you're sitting on TV, what do the TV commercials show you on television at night?
Food.
Food. Lots of food commercials. Lots of it. And as soon as you see the food commercials, you head over to the refrigerator and you get 25 calories, 50 calories, 75 calories. Most people get half their calories after 5 o'clock in the evening to 2/3 of it. So you're simply eating too many calories in the evening. That's the issue.
So if you want to join Hugh with a myth you'd like Zorba to bust, just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And Zorba, we have a listener with us now in Salem, Missouri. Hi.
Hello, how are you today?
We're fine. How can we help you?
Well, I was listening to a radio program the other day that said that for children who have hyperactive activity or attention deficit syndrome, that if they were to take omega-3 fatty acids, that it takes the edge off of their impulsiveness. It really doesn't help for the attention deficit part, but it does take the edge off the impulsiveness. And I needed to know, is this true? And then the second part of the question is, my grandson does not eat fish. So what other foods have omega-3 fatty acids?
You know, you just answered my first question, which is that why are you calling and asking about this? And you just answered it's because of your grandson.
Right.
That's it. Well, first of all, where do you get omega-3 fatty acids? You can get them besides fish. You can get them through nuts. Not peanuts. Peanuts are a legume that are roasted. They're not a real nut.
Right.
But nuts such as walnuts, cashews, kids will tend not to eat nuts. Adults eat nuts. And you can get them through capsules, through fish oil capsules. They'll have them. I don't think there's any scientific evidence that omega-3 fatty acids will do anything for impulsiveness. If that were the case, obviously, it would be a really easy way of giving a supplement to kids who have ADHD, attention deficit disorder, with hyperactivity, or matter for that matter, adults who have an impulsiveness could just eat a lot of fish or have omega-3 fatty acids and they'll be less impulsive. Certainly wouldn't work well if you wanted to have a store and you had impulsive buying. Does that make a difference? But I don't think there's any evidence for that. My guess is when you listen to it on the show, somebody wrote a book about omega-3 fatty acids and attention deficit disorder, or they might have been selling them. But I've never heard about that. I don't think there's any scientific evidence about it right now. And I don't think it would do any harm. But it's really hard to get kids to swallow pills. And that would be what you would have to do to swallow a capsule. How old is your son? Is your grandson? Five. Mm-hmm. Does he have hyperactivity?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
He keeps us running. He's definitely a bundle of joy at the household.
Yeah, a bundle of joy at the household. That's a grandpa for you.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think the omega-3 fatty acids will do much, so.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure. Good luck.
Appreciate the call. Yeah, it's easier for grandpa. You have the fun with the kid, and then it's mom or dad.
That's right.
To take care of.
There you go.
As soon as you're a little worn out. Well, thanks to the caller, and Zorba, thank you too.
A pleasure, Tom.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org.
And don't forget, our producer is available anytime at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg are the guys on the other side of the glass. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark. Hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1208Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.